This is the Podium Finish Live from Austin, Texas, and various points across the country. Here's your host, Rob Johnson.
And a good day to everybody out there, and happy Monday. Here we are for episode 13 of the Podium Finish Live here on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other major streaming platforms for your podcasts. I'm Rob Tiongson, a motorsports journalist based out of Austin, Texas, and I've been covering NASCAR since 2008. I'm very glad that you could join us for another episode of TPF Live as we're getting closer to the start of the NASCAR season. Now, as I keep track, of course, this is our 10th off-season episode, but our 13th overall. And no, I'm not superstitious. I think this is going to be a really good episode. So don't worry about, you know, walking under a ladder, seeing a black cat. None of those hijinks are going to curse this show. It's going to be an awesome show. And I'm so excited because we've got a lot to get to. And we've got a couple of great guests that will be joining us here on TPF Live. So we have to get to it right now. And let's just do so by introducing my co-host and my friend Nathan Solomon, who is always here for each of these programs. And we were just talking before the show kicked off about the weather. I know I said I'm cold here as of the recording here on Sunday morning. It's about 47 degrees in Austin. But Nathan, hope you're doing well. How warm is it in New York?
Not very. I mean, it was just -4 the other day, -7. I mean, it's not been very nice up here in New York. But yeah, I'm doing well, I guess, as well as I can with this weather. Hopefully it'll start warming up soon because, you know, once it starts warming up, that means racing season's here. But of course, excited to be here for another great episode of this podcast. And it's kind of crazy. This is our 13th episode already. It feels like we just started like a week ago. So another jam-packed episode and excited for it.
Absolutely. I was going to say, yeah, when the warmer weather arrives, it usually means racing season is just around the corner. And we're getting there, folks. We are definitely inching closer to seeing some cars at Daytona. And of course, for the first time ever, and not just our lifetimes, but the first time ever for NASCAR, the Busch Light Clash at the LA Coliseum. And my foretelling some topics we're going to talk about today. Well, you'll have to tune in and just listen in and be a good audience member for this. Now, I did mention we have a couple of great guests that are joining the show, but let me not be remiss to introduce our special guest panelists on this program for today. And he's a sort of family member of TPF, who is one of our photojournalists who joined us last year. And he shot the races at Las Vegas and Phoenix last fall. So you got to see a lot of great NASCAR action. And of course, the season finale when he paired up with Luis Torres. And that, of course, would be our good friend, Landon Ciardullo, who's also a sim racer. Landon, how are you doing today, buddy?
Pretty good, guys. I appreciate you having me on the show. I've been meaning to do this for a while, but just haven't had the time. Just staying busy and glad to be here.
Yeah, for sure. We're happy to have you around. And, you know, we obviously know who you are, but, you know, I'll allow you a little bit of time just to introduce yourself to the audience members who are listening in and just kind of introduce yourself to the fans who are tuning in.
Yeah. So I am I'm a photographer for the Podium Finish. Been doing it for about, I'll say, a year and a half, probably 2 years now since I've joined. Loved motorsports since I was 4 years old. I'm 20 now, so still young. But everything's great. Just a lot of photography's hard. I mean, a lot of practicing, a lot of, I wouldn't say training, but it is very hard, especially when you're at the racetrack, to get those shots that people want to see. But yeah.
No, it's always, as Nathan would say, a little bit of baptism by fire, but it's true. I mean, you know, Nathan and I primarily writing articles, so we know the challenge with that. But to actually tell the pictures with visuals, of course, you're not telling the cars to stay still because you want to get a certain angle. These drivers are going so fast around the track that you have to react just as quickly as they do around the track to get that perfect shot. And that's the reason why you're on the team, because you get a lot of these great shots that we have been featuring on TEPF. So very glad to have you on the team, and super happy that you're on for today's show. Now, before I get to the format of the show and introduce our guests, of course, this episode is, of course, being recorded in advance of a very special holiday in America, which, of course, would be Martin Luther King Jr. Day. So, you know, certainly I wanted to take a moment to just observe the fact that this incredible man who's a civil rights leader, you know, that's the reason why, you know, when we get to January, it's not just a day for us to remember this remarkable man who did so much for this the country, but, you know, just remembering to be a kind human being, to fight for equality, and just make sure everybody, you know, feels like no matter what their color, their skin, or whatever they are, that they feel like they can be accepted amongst each other. So, you know, certainly let's remember this special day, not just as a federal holiday, but a day about a man who did what Ken Squire would say, uncommon deeds for the common people. So just wanted to get that out there. And let's go ahead and explain why this show is so special for today, besides the fact Landon's here. Because it's going to be a bit of a junior motorsports type of racing show today. Not really because I was thinking back in October that, you know, we're going to do it like this, but hey, it worked out perfectly because we've got Josh Berry and Sam Mayer who will be sharing the hot seat today. So, yeah, I interviewed them last fall at Charlotte Motor Speedway during the Roval Race weekend, and I think it's time to hear their thoughts as they prepare for this year. So it's going to be pretty exciting to hear a little bit about what they went through last year and kind of how they're getting ready for 2022 as the season gets a little bit closer each day and each week out. Now, for those of you who are listening into the show for the first time, or it's been a while since you last tuned in, and shame on you if you've not listened in for the last several shows, let me explain a little bit about the format of this program. So we do a little introduction like we just did, and then we get into our first segment, which is always going to be Podium Perspectives. So I'll be fielding the topics, and I have Nathan and sometimes a guest panelist joining in to talk about the latest happenings in motorsports, primarily in NASCAR, but we might throw in some other series once in a while. And then we, of course, have our interview segment, which this week we're bringing back the hot seat interview with Josh Berry and Sam Mayer, who will be sharing that seat here a little bit later on. So before we kick off Podium Perspectives, just a reminder for those of you who are shopping for diecast cars, whether that's those latest race versions from Lionel Racing, or you're looking for a Greenlight collectible, whatever in-stock diecast car that you're looking for, just go to CircleBDiecast.com. And if you spend $20 or more on in-stock items, you can get free shipping by using promo code TPF2022. That, of course, is TPF2022. And if you do that, you get free shipping, and you're going to feel pretty good because you can get more cars purchased and hopefully don't have a hard time explaining to your significant partner or girlfriend, wife, if you're a girl, you know, whatever you're, you know, trying to excuse yourself for with shopping for these diecast cars. You can blame me for that. So go to CircleBDiecast.com, spend $20 or more to get free shipping by using promo code TPF2022. And I hope I didn't anger anybody as we get closer to Valentine's Day, aka Single Awareness Day. So now that I've injected my sense of humor with a promo, let's get over to Podium Perspectives. And as I mentioned, of course, this is going to be a really awesome addition to Podium Perspectives because we've got so much to get to here in terms of our topics. Now, as we get closer to the start of the season, we've got a trio of talking points that we'd like to share with you and get our panelists' thoughts. And then if you wanted to chime in, folks, go ahead and tweet to us at The Podium Finish, or to me at Rob Tiongson, or Nathan at nsolly02, or at with Landon even. His Twitter handle, of course, is crdulolandon. So let's get to it, gentlemen. Topic one. Eric Almirola recently announced that the 2022 season will be his final full-time effort in the NASCAR Cup Series, as he cited the need to spend more time with his family, especially as he is winding down his stock car career. Now, Almirola did not dismiss the fact that he may do some one-offs here and there, but he wanted to at least conclude this portion of his racing career in terms of a full-time effort. So Almirola has been one of the first success stories with NASCAR's diversity program, and he has three cup wins in his name, particularly with the race at Daytona in 2014, Talladega in 2018, and of course last year at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. So let's kick things off with Nathan, and then we'll hear from from Landon. So Nathan, you know, you were at that press conference with me last week, and Eric seemed quite content with his decision. And he kind of just let folks know that, yeah, he's not going to go completely away from racing, but he's at least done doing the full-time racing situation after this year. So, you know, we talked a little bit about this last week, but what can we expect from AA this year? And how does his decision impact SHR for the rest of this year?
Yeah, I mean, first, let me say, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I was definitely a little bit surprised to hear the announcement of Almirola retiring. You know, it kind of doesn't feel like he's been in the Cup Series for that long, but, you know, of course you can't, I just deny the fact that, you know, or, you know, deny it from anybody that you know, want to spend more time with your family. Like, you can't blame him for that, of course. So, you know, best of luck to him this year, and you know, hopefully, you know, like you said, he seems pretty content with his decision. But, you know, in terms of, like, expectations and everything, it's kind of hard to have expectations for him. I think, you know, of course, you expect to have to make the playoffs and everything just when you're in that competitive of a car. But, I mean, it's not like he won't be racing for a ride next year. So kind of just, you know, whatever happens in a sense. But, you know, I'd love to see him get back to victory lane a couple of times. I mean, he's definitely shown, you know, he can still win races. I mean, he's a very good super speedway racer. I mean, he'll be one of the favorites to win the Daytona 500. I mean, he could have easily won it in 2018. Obviously, you know, he's pretty good at 1 mile tracks. He always ran pretty well at Phoenix. He obviously won Loudon. So I think that we'll see him get to victory lane again, at least once here in 2022. But for after his full-time career, I'd love to see him, like, maybe make some starts in the Xfinity Series. Kind of, I mean, not like go full-time, sort of like what Adrian Allmendinger did, but, you know, just maybe make a handful of starts somewhere and be in just a super competitive car where I can go out there and have fun and win races and, you know, not really go through some more of those frustrations of being a full-time driver. And, you know, kind of circling back a little bit, that's something we talked about last week and the Ryan Preece reserve signing. I mean, he's sitting pretty now. I mean, he's kind of in a position where, you know, like, that'll most likely, the number 10 car will most likely be his next year. I mean, it's tough to foreshadow from a year from now, but I mean, just the way things are going and his ties to Kevin Harvick and, you know, making the starts he's going to make. He's going to make at least two Cup Series starts. Now that he's, you know, signed on with Rick Ware, you know, he could end up doing more starts with them, depending on what their lineup's going to be and how many cars they're going to end up fielding. So, you know, I expect him to be competitive in the Truck Series as well. So, I mean, you know, Preece made a super smart decision there. So I'm wonderful to see more of these, I guess, reserve signings here in the future.
You certainly brought up a good point just because of that reserve situation. It almost kind of makes me think of Hendrick's situation back in 2016 when Dale Jr. got sidelined because of his concussion situation. And that brought in Jeff Gordon from retirement just to kind of fill in. But it also brought in Alex Bowman. And in a way, with Chase Elliott being a rookie who took over for Jeff Gordon's car, you know, it kind of made the rebuilding process accelerate for Hendrick to where they're now back to being one of that top team effort in the Cup Series. So certainly something to think about right there. Now, Landon, we got to hear a little bit from Nathan about, you know, Almirola's retirement from full-time racing. But what do you think of the situation? Were you a little bit shocked about Almirola's decision?
I was and I wasn't. I mean, it felt like you ever get that hinge that somebody is going to be retiring soon, and I kind of felt that with Eric Almirola. I mean, it's not saying, not bashing on him, nothing like that. He's a great driver, great personality. He's a family man, and a lot of the drivers in the garage are family men, and I agree with Nathan 100% that the biggest thing is he wants to focus on family. I mean, these drivers are constantly in the garage, constantly at the shops, working, you know, 12-hour shifts. Some of them do. And I think right now, especially with the whole COVID thing going on, I think it's putting a perspective in a lot of people's minds, especially the drivers, that, hey, my family is the biggest thing in this world. I need to focus on them and, you know, put racing to the side. Of course, I want to see Eric Almirola do some other races. Of course, maybe do some Xfinity, some trucks, which I think is a possible chance of him doing that. But everybody's go-to racing nowadays is dirt. And I'm not really sure with Eric Almirola's dirt experience, but it would be cool to see him getting, you know, a dirt midget or a modified or something like that, kind of test the waters with that, or maybe even go up to endurance racing. So, again, I'm surprised, but I'm not.
Yeah, no, definitely the grind of racing in the Cup Series or in motorsports is that you spend a lot of time from the spend a lot of time away, rather, from the ones you love. So in a way, you know, I totally understand his decision to step back. He's not a very old driver. He's close to my age, which would be early 20s. I'm kidding, late 30s. But, you know, I understand because the grind is a lot. And even if you are passionate about being in motorsports, there's a lot expected of you to bring your best effort all the time. And certainly, you know, I respect his decision as well. And, you know, when I watched his video on YouTube, I just loved how happy he was. It didn't seem like a man full of regrets with his decision. And I'm going to share a little bit of that on the podiumfinish.net a little bit later this week about why he's stepping away and some of the things he's going to take away from the sport and how he wants to be remembered. And to kind of circle back with what Nathan talked about being a factor at Daytona, let's not forget the fact that he came so close to winning the 2018 Daytona 500 before Austin Dillon pulled a Dale Earnhardt versus Al Unser Jr. move before turn three on the final lap. So I would not be surprised if Almirola has a great race and great performance in Daytona, especially with the fact that he's got Drew Blankensderfer becoming his crew chief this year. So that's pretty cool. And I just looked at the fact that Almirola did race on dirt. So possibly he might go to, you know, come back to his roots a little bit because he did race on dirt when he was growing up. But let me get back to kind of the follow-up topic about this first topic we're talking about. And we'll start off with Nathan and then Landon, of course. We talked a little bit about spending time with family, and when you don't get to spend a lot of time with them, you know, that certainly can be on the back burner of your mind. You know, we think of these stick and ball athletes, they get paid tons of money, but, you know, it's understandable that they, you know, start to think when they get a little bit older, they've had some successes, but maybe some tough times, that maybe it's not that hard to walk away from what you've been doing since you were a kid. Do you think that the grind of a long NASCAR season is starting to curtail the career of these drivers at a much younger age than, you know, drivers I grew up watching, you know, when they stepped away in their 40s? Do you think this whole thing, retiring in your late 30s, is going to be a thing? What do you think, Nathan? What do you think, Landon?
Maybe. I mean, you kind of see like a little bit of a mixed bag, sort of. I mean, you know, you kind of look at some of the guys now. I mean, Kurt Busch, Kevin Harvick, you know, Martin Truex Jr., they're in their 40s. I think Martin Truex Jr. is in his 40s, but you still kind of have a little bit of an older generation still in NASCAR and still wanting to race. But then, yeah, at the same time, you look at someone like Almirola, who I think he's 36 or 38. And then, you know, a couple of years ago, you look at someone like Carl Edwards, who stepped away when he was in his 30s. And, I mean, that was a huge shock after, I mean, him being oh so close to winning, or being oh so close, I guess, to winning what could be three championships. Like, I know obviously he didn't win any championships, but I mean, he came just short of winning three championships in 2008, 2011, 2016, and he stepped away. So that was a big surprise, but maybe a little bit. I think you're starting to see some of these guys come into NASCAR at a little bit of a younger age. So maybe just they're done at a little bit of a younger age. But you know, I think, you know, some of the safety advancements and everything that's come along, I think that might make some people feel a little bit more comfortable sticking around for a long time. And yeah, I mean, the grind of being on the road, you know, it's difficult. You're away from family 38 weeks a year, and you've seen a lot of crew chiefs too kind of step away as well, like Todd Gordon most recently, Cole Pern, Martin Truex Jr.'s old crew chief. I mean, you know, those are kind of, you know, younger guys, you know, in the grand scheme of things. So I think maybe a little bit compared to what it used to be. I mean, Mark Martin raced till he was like 50. Dale Sr., when he died, he was 50 or 51. So yeah, I think a little bit, but I think you're still going to see a lot of guys kind of racing in their mid 40s going down the road. But, you know, some people are just done sooner. You know, some people just want to spend time with family. I mean, you know, you look at someone like Almirola compared to like Martin Truex Jr. I mean, Almirola has 2 kids. Martin Truex Jr., he doesn't have any kids. But so, I mean, I think, you know, having kids like that definitely plays into the decision. But so I think maybe a little bit in terms of maybe retiring a little bit younger, a little bit sooner than I guess in the olden days, if you will.
Yeah, I think kids will have a way to make your decisions change, because when you're in a situation where you don't have the kids around, but you have, you know, a partner or a wife, and maybe you've been through some health issues, you do kind of consider the situation at hand, but maybe you're not immediately thinking of retiring so soon. But with Alan Merle's situation, we also can't forget the fact that he had that really bad crash at Kansas, I think in 2017, that really did a number on him. And we have to, it's kind of, I don't want to say we don't appreciate, but maybe we don't really think about the fact that he had to recover from that, not just from a physical standpoint, but from a mental standpoint too. You know, especially when RPM made the decision to keep Bubba Wallace in the 43 for the following year. And Almirola, you know, fortunately he got swooped up by Stuart Haas Racing, which gave him this opportunity to close his career out on his terms. Now, Landon, kind of heard a little bit from Nathan about, you know, the grind of a NASCAR season, and that you've been shooting for us for the last year and a half, 2 years coming into this year. You've seen it up close. You've been at championship race weekend. You know, do you think that the grind of a NASCAR season, being as long as it is it going to start curtailing the careers of these drivers at a much younger age?
The first thing I want to say is I hope not. being at the races and, you know, getting to that, you know, you get that special access to the garage and you see everybody. And yes, there's some older guys there that work, you know, as pit crew or maybe just as part of the team. But it's rough. I mean, the drivers are constantly, you know, up and doing stuff. The crew chiefs, crew members, pit crew guy, everybody. And going back to what, you know, I said, it's family. You know, a lot of people are able to bring their family to the track, which it's a big plus because they get to hang with them at the haulers or, you know, in the garage, everything like that. But with COVID going on, and like I said, I think it's just getting into everybody's mind that, hey, this is becoming really rough to where I can't see my family and I need to get back. And I agree with Nathan. I mean, it's this younger generation is like they're powerhouses. And you look at all the guys that are coming up, you know, from the trucks or from the Xfinity, and they've got that fire where they're like, I'm going to race till I'm 60. But then you look at, and it's hard to tell because you look at the drivers like Mark Martin, you look at Jimmy Johnson, Casey Kane, Tony Stewart. Did they really actually retire? They retired from NASCAR, but you got Jimmy Johnson running full-time IndyCar the year after. You got Casey Kane running full-time World of Outlaws. Tony Stewart running those little dirt midgets, and he's still doing NHRA stuff. I mean, he just opened up a team and had 2 people come to him. And then Mark Martin raced till he, what, who's 55? It's going to be hard to tell because you really don't know what goes on in the racing world. Like, for instance, Carl Edwards. Nobody knew he was going to retire. I mean, he was young. He was fighting for a championship, and then the next year he retired. So I'm excited to see, but I will be very upset if I see some of the guys that I've been watching since I was young retire within the next few years.
That's a good point that you brought up about, you know, hoping to see these drivers around, because, like, Jimmy Johnson, he might be a little bit older now, but he's still got the competitive fire in him, because he's now good at racing full-time in IndyCar. And that's not exactly a slouch vehicle for a 46-year-old driver to handle. Those are some rocket ships compared to NASCAR. And Casey Kane, you know, after his situation to step away from cup racing with the, you know, how he got dehydrated, he's going to be full-time in the world of Outlaws, where these races are not exactly super long, but they're going to demand a lot out of him, given the reaction time and the younger drivers and the number of races that are going to be on that schedule. So, you know, maybe it's beyond just the age situation, but maybe not even just the number of races. There's other things, like you said, guys, that's going on that we, you know, we don't know what's going on, because y'all brought up Carl Edwards very quickly about this topic. And, you know, when he stepped away from NASCAR altogether, he was only 37, and I'm going to be 37 this year. I don't feel like I'm at any point in my life to just, you know, not do anything else. And it's not to say he's not doing anything else, but, you know, to step away from NASCAR at that age, it's, yeah, I hope we don't get to see a lot of drivers retire yet. So we'll see what happens. And hopefully it's not a topic we bring up a lot on TPF Live. Now, getting to our second topic, we've talked a lot about testing. And maybe Allen Iverson, who maybe tunes in, is probably going to skip this topic because it's almost like talking about practice. But, you know, the NASCAR Cup Series teams, they tested at Daytona this past week. And we actually got to see some drafting sessions during the day and evening sessions. And from what I saw, and I don't know if you guys saw it too, it really seemed like the drivers had that ability to even tandem draft a little bit, but also punch that big hole in the air to get a great run as they went into the corners, which I thought was super cool to see, but also kind of makes for dicey situations. So Landon, we're going to start off with you, and then we'll hear from Nathan. It's the same question for you both. So once you're done with your thoughts, Landon, you know, Nathan can chime in afterward. You know, how promising is this next gen car going to be in terms of providing exciting pack racing and maybe some tandem racing?
I think it's, from what I've seen, I think it's going to be great. I mean, I tuned in and watched the live stream that they have on YouTube from NASCAR, which it looked great. I mean, They're pushing each other. They're, you know, they have stability in the cars, which is nice. Except for Eric Amarola. I don't know what was going on with his car, but that thing was skewed like crazy. also watched, I believe it was Brad Keselowski's onboard or Ryan Newman, one of them. And it looked good. I'm excited for it. And I think that with everything that is going on with the way they built these cars, I think the safety aspects of the car are going to be very, very helpful. And I know they're using a different draft package and everything like that. So I'm excited, really excited to see what happens in, you know, at Daytona.
Yeah, I think you're going to see like a little bit of everything. Like, you know, when you kind of combine like everything that we've seen in the last 10 or 12 years, or really everything since like the Car of Tomorrow, in terms of just like, you know, super speedway packages, like you're gonna see a little bit of everything. Like, you know, the tandem racing that we kind of saw in 2011, you can kind of do that to an extent. I think it was Joey Logano though saying that you can't do it for a very long time because you're gonna wreck. Just because like the bumpers and everything and the fenders are, you know, they're round, so round on round isn't really a great combination to like stay going straight for a super long time. Like you said, he was like white knuckling it going down the straightaway. But I mean, that's where the most speed is right there. So like, if you know, if you want to get a really big run and get a really big push, then I think, you know, you're gonna have to do a tandem. Like when in that first pack on, I think it was the first day of testing, I guess it was Tuesday, you know, Logano and Hamlin, like they were kind of towards the back of the pack, and then they kind of just like linked up to do the little bit of hand drafting, and they just shot right to the front. Like they were super fast with it. And I mean, it almost caused a wreck, but I mean, it just shows some of the speed that you can get just doing that tandem drafting. So that's going to be the way to get big runs. But like, I really did like what I see. I mean, I think, or like what I saw rather, I think the speeds were around 188, 190, which is pretty good. That's a few miles per hour slower than it was for the last two races on Super Speedway last year. But I mean, it was super racy. Like there, you know, lots of three wides. I mean, they, they're, you know, hard to drive, which is, you know, something that we wanted to see more. And I think the tandem drafting and just having that in there is gonna make for another, I guess, interesting aspect to super speedway racing. Like, you know, when they slowed the cars down a little bit after the first two races last year and after Logano flipped to Talladega, you know, it was to make it so, you know, the speeds were lower and so the runs came a little bit slower. But now the speeds are a little bit slower, but I think the runs come a little bit faster. So, you know, there's different blind spots. Spotters are going to have to be aware of different spots. I think it's just going to make for a really fun combination. And I'm super excited for Speed Week. I think it's going to be a really fun week, some great racing. Plus you throw in the trucks in the Xfinity series, two great racing packages already. So I think that with this Cup Series package, I'm getting more and more confidence every time we see it out in the track. And a few weeks from now, we'll see it back out on the track once more before the Busch Clash out in Phoenix for one more organizational test.
Certainly. And the thing I'm kind of thinking about is, you know, the rear view cameras. I don't know if that's going to be a feature on all the time. That's something I'm going to ask Alex Bowman when I get to interview him, you know, this week. Just how much is that rear view camera going to be a factor? Because if that's going to be a feature for sure in these races, yeah, you still need that spotter when a driver's alongside you. But when you're behind you, you can almost get a little bit more offensive. So that's going to be exciting in itself. And yeah, Landon, it's true about when we saw Brad Keselowski's onboard camera that was featured, you know, posted on YouTube, he got some incredible runs. And there were moments I thought he was going to slam into Harris and Burton or other drivers in that pack. So it's really interesting to see, just because a lot of folks had, including myself, had a bit of concern about the next gen car and how would it take to a oval or speedway track. And my confidence keeps getting higher and higher with these organizational tests that keep, you know, getting scheduled. And we are seeing a lot of potential out of these new stock cars. So let's actually continue this topic a little bit. You know, Nathan and I have talked about this on various editions of the show about the risk versus reward aspect of NASCAR Cup racing. And it's no secret that these teams don't have a bunch of cars ready for Daytona. So is there a bit of caution with, you know, aggression out there on the track right now? Or, you know, are the teams thinking, you know what, the only way we're going to learn is to give it 110% right now? Where is that line between risk versus reward? We're going to hear from Landon first and then Nathan.
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, you want to be cautious because you got, you know, hey, we only have a few limited amount of these cars and we got to, you know, divide them separately within the team. I think that's in the back of their head. I know they think about it, but of course the race car drivers are going to go 110% all the way. Maybe beginning of the race, they're going to calm it down a little bit, but I know towards the end, it's just going to be like your normal Daytona 500 going for it every second of the way.
I don't think you can be cautious if you're a race car driver, because I mean, you're out there, you're paid to go out there and race and try to win. And if you're not going 110%, you're not going to win. You're not going to get the results that you want. So, you know, I don't think that you can be cautious out there, because then you're not going to get the results that you want. But then, yeah, I mean, on the other hand, there are car concerns. I mean, you know, Rob, you and I were, you know, we were in some of those calls throughout the week. I mean, teams are relatively concerned about the number of cars that are available. And most teams only have two cars done right now and they're working on a third, when the hope was five would be ready by the 500. It doesn't really look like that's going to happen, but you know, but you can't go, you guys, if you want to win, you want to do well, you want to win money, you want to, you know, do everything that comes along with winning, like you have to go 110%. And sometimes that involves tearing up race cars, unfortunately. My main concern was that they're going to wreck a bunch of cars for the Daytona test. Unfortunately, they did not do that. But you know, when you kind of look at the Busch Clash, I mean, there's going to be damage there. I mean, it's a quarter mile track. Like, there's going to be chaos. Like, the cars are going to get torn up. And then, you know, you go east and, you know, like 9 days after the clash, all of a sudden you're testing at Daytona. And, you know, we've talked about this a little bit before on some of our internal discussions, but, you know, you have four practices, qualifying, the duels, and then the 500. I mean, yeah, that's seven different chances where you can wreck cars. If you only have three or four cars ready, I mean, you know, if you wreck three cars, that can kind of be devastating. But, you know, when you kind of look at, like, what happened when Austin Dillon wrecked that car at Charlotte and how quick they were able to turn it around, like, literally by the end of the – like, the car was destroyed. By the end of the day, they had it back on the track. So they can turn these cars around a lot quicker. But, you know, to have the most success in this series, you can't be cautious. You have to raise 110%. Whatever happens, and you know, unfortunately, you just have to kind of leave it up to the mechanics, leave it up to the fab guys, and hope that these cars get turned around to get ready to be back out on the track. And I know there's maybe some logistical issues with so much West Coast action happening early this year with testing and the Busch Clash and the West Coast Swing, and then you're down at COTA at the end of March. But yeah, you have to go 100%, or you're not going to do well in the Cup Series. That's just how it works.
Yeah, if you gotta make or break these things. I mean, if you're cautious, you're pretty much just gonna stay at home and you're not gonna do excel. And that's kind of the unique challenge that these Cup drivers and teams are gonna face is, you know, yeah, you have to be cautious, but then you have to be aggressive too, to get things done. And that's the only way to excel, because yes, the chassis are not gonna be built by the teams, they're being delivered from a vendor. There's a little bit more spec, if you will, with the Cup Series, but yet there's still that difference maker, the drivers, the teams, you know, that aggression level that we expect each weekend and weekend out. So, you know, certainly when we get to the Clash at the Coliseum, I don't think anybody's going to take it easy on that quarter mile racetrack. And if they do, I mean, they're going to get lapped in a hurry. And then when it comes to Daytona Speed Week, I mean, that's a great point, Nathan. There's going to be so many practice sessions. And these drivers have to utilize those sessions, and that they can't afford to sit their car in the garage area and think, well, you know, I got Thursday night, the dual race, we're going to be just fine. And what if the conditions in that race differ greatly from Sunday afternoon for the Daytona 500? So many questions, so little answers, but that's great. We want that in racing. We want unpredictability when it comes to Daytona and all these other 35 races and those two exhibition races, because that gives me, Nathan, Landon, everybody on TPF so much to think about and to cover for 2022. So in the words of Tony Romo, here we go, Jim. So sorry, I don't mean to do Tony Romo's voice on this program and shred my vocals for our final topic. I know, guys, it's Podium Perspective is going by so quickly today. So we're going to kind of split up topic three a little bit. So this is topic 3A. So we talked a little bit about the Busch Light Clash, which of course is an exhibition race that's going to have all the 36 charter teams and drivers at the track, with some notable drivers like Ryan Preece in the number 15 Rick Ware car, Cody Ware in Rick Ware's number 51 car. And yes, Cody Ware will be racing full time in the Cup Series, so congrats to him on that situation. And then, of course, Spire Motorsports number 77 entry has our good friend and our buddy Landon Castle, the king of cryptocurrency. And Landon, if I teased you a little bit, hey buddy, I owe you one, so there you go. So we're getting closer to this race, which I know for the traditionalists it's not Daytona, so you know, I get a little bit of angry feeling about that, but I'm one of those folks who's going to give this race a try. I'm curious to see what craziness is going to ensue. And just, you know, seeing stock cars on not a purpose-built quarter mile, but on a makeshift quarter mile racetrack at one of the most famous sports arenas in all of the world, the LA Coliseum. So we're going to start with Nathan and then Landon. I don't want to like give my thoughts just yet about the Busch Light Clash, but we're getting so much closer to this, guys. That race weekend's going to be just nuts, in my opinion. But, you know, not just so much from an expectation standpoint, because we know about racing. Let's think about, you know, that football fan who's watching, you know, the action on Fox NFL. And all of a sudden, they're being intrigued by a NASCAR promo about a race at a football stadium. You know, how much potential does this race have to connect with non-racing fans and perhaps keep them plugged in? Because we've seen a lot of new fans come into the sport, and even NFL stars like Bernard Pollard become a part of racing. You know, Landon, Nathan, what do y'all think?
Yeah, I think just that. I think it's going to be a great way to draw new fans. I mean, first off, I mean, it's going to kick off Super Bowl week in L.A. And like that's kind of a big deal. I mean, you know, L.A. is, of course, you know, the entertainment capital of the world. There's going to be a ton of celebrities, you know, hopefully at that race and at that event. And obviously the Super Bowl is one of the biggest events in the world. So to be able to be a part of Super Bowl week is super awesome for NASCAR. But yeah, to your point, just, you know, the advertising of it, like if I remember right, you know, as we're recording this, we are recording this right before the first NFL game on Fox for the playoffs. And I read on Twitter that there's going to be a big NASCAR ad that's going to start airing during this football game, you know, advertising the LA Clash, advertising the season, advertising the Daytona 500. And when you think about it, 20, 30, 40 million people are going to watch this playoff game. So that's 20, 30, 40 million people that are going to see this ad for the Busch Clash in LA. And it's so untraditional, something that we've never really seen before. So, you know, people are going to see it like, wow, you know, this is new. This is kind of interesting, kind of odd, you know, just, I guess, several different reactions to it at the same time. Like, oh, you know what? There's no football that Sunday. You know, I'm gonna watch the NASCAR race in the LA Coliseum because why not? Like, this sounds kind of cool. And you know, we've got NASCAR team owner Pitbull, which sounds very weird to say, performing before the clash. Like, it's gonna be a big high profile event, and NASCAR is gonna have two high profile events in 3 weeks with the clash and then the Daytona 500. So I think this is a big turning point for NASCAR with the new car and everything. It'll be a great way to showcase the new car. And I think ratings for this event could be through the roof. And if ratings in this race does really well, then it could mean, you know, very high ratings for the Daytona 500, and hope that trickle down from race to race in terms of ratings, I guess, going down, will be less. Like, and hopefully, you know, more people want to stick around. And, you know, if ratings are really good in NASCAR this year, then that has a big effect for future seasons. I mean, that then, you know, Big Fox will want to air more races instead of FS1, and big NBC is going to want to air more races compared to USA Network, or God forbid we ever go to races exclusively on Peacock. That'd be awful. But yeah, like this Busch Clash, like it's an important race for NASCAR, because if you can get a lot of new eyes on the sport, then it could have a great effect on the sport for years to come.
And you sold me on the Busch Light Clash, and I mean, I'm obviously going to be tuning in and covering it remotely because, hey, I'm a NASCAR journalist. But this has all the buzz and all the intrigue of the 2001 season when Fox NASCAR did their first season. And I can't help but think of how many people tuned into Fox's NASCAR races. I was only in ninth grade, so not to bore you guys, I was like 15 years old, and I had a lot of my classmates and bullies come up to me and say, hey, Rob, I watched that NASCAR race. That's cool. Now I'm going to beat you up. No, I'm kidding. But they tuned in because Fox did a great job advertising everything. So I think this is almost like 2001 again, in a way, don't you think?
And I must add first, we talked about entertainment. NASCAR just announced, as we're talking about this, Ice Cube will also be performing at the Busch Clash. I thought I'd add that. So we have another another performer.
That's pretty sweet. I mean, that in itself is going to definitely intrigue so many different audience members. We need that for NASCAR if we're going to grow this sport. I mean, Pitbull's there. We now got Ice Cube. The only thing that could make this race even better to me as a kind of music fan, I mean, I like old music. Throw in Avril Lavigne. Let's get her to a NASCAR race. I mean, she met Jeff Gordon in 2003. Let's get her. Maybe you'll get the punk rock fans and pop punk fans to tune in. I'm not a pop punk music, but I like Avril. So there you go. Landon, I know we've kind of monopolized this part, but this topic is just, it's a buzz right now. What do you think, buddy?
Well, first of all, I think we should get some classic rock into this stadium. I think we should probably go, Motley Crue or something like that. I think it's going to be interesting. You know, it's a brand new track. a lot of people are like, oh, why the heck are we going here? You know, you can only fit like 20 something cars on the track. So I think that's going to be, see how close together these cars are. I think the racing is going to be phenomenal. Going back to, you know, only having a certain amount of the next gen cars, it's going to be crazy because there's going to be a lot of bumpers and beat and bang and everything like that. It's going to be another Martinsville race, in my opinion. But it does leave some questions, you know, floating around there. Is this taking place? Is this going to be on the schedule for the next coming years? Is this going to take place of this so-called Auto Club Speedway short track? Because I know they're not doing Auto Club this year with short track. So the tracks, I mean, I've been to Auto Club plenty of times. There's a lot of fans in the Los Angeles area. So I think it's going to be a great turnout for the Coliseum. And of course, the tracks are only 2 hours away from each other. So it's nothing crazy, but I would love to see where NASCAR goes with this. And I'm excited to see all the entertainment and all the, you know, hype for it. So again, I'm excited, but it's one of those things where we're going to have to sit back and watch and just wish that we were there.
I absolutely wished I could be there, because Austin to LA is not like Austin to, I don't know, Alaska. It's a really good flight that I could take, but don't have the time right now to go to a race. But hopefully Luis Torres, our good friend and photojournalist, will be there. He's going to have a lot to get to, because now with Ice Cube going to be there, that's exciting. It's not just going to be, oh, why are we having this halftime break? Well, now it makes sense to have one to have this cross appeal and, you know, intrigue with motorsports amongst the traditionalists, the new people, new fans you can tap into. And number three, the entertainment industry in LA, you might as well go ahead and capitalize on that, because you don't just go to LA, host a race, and you don't have, you know, the people that are in that industry not be there. It's like going to Texas Motor Speedway not having cowboy hats. So I'm excited for this race. And so look at the calendar, we're not that far away from that, folks. I think that's what, 3 weeks away. So in three more weeks, we're going to be talking about the Busch Light Clash, and maybe we'll talk about the race itself when we get to episode, I think that's going to be episode 17, but correct me if I'm wrong, folks, because I sometimes can be wrong. Now, to kind of get to a more motorsport-centric topic, now that I'm trying to not think too much about the Busch Light Clash and how awesome that race is going to be, kind of like our final topic for Podium Perspectives. Now, it was announced this past week that Haley Deegan, Chase Briscoe, Harrison Burton, and Austin Cindric were all going to take part in the 2.5-hour IMSA Michelin Pilot Challenge race at Daytona, which will be contested next weekend, not next weekend, but rather on January 28th. That will be the last Friday of this month. That's kind of like the lead up, if you will, to the Rolex 24. Now, given the fact that, you know, a lot of these drivers are trying to get more experience in road course cars and road course racing, you know, it almost could be a good practice session, given how road course heavy NASCAR is getting with their schedule. And these younger drivers not having a lot of seat time, getting a little bit more familiar with a car that might be a little bit like the Cup car. I don't know about Haley Deegan, but for Briscoe and Burton and Cindric, being the young Ford drivers they are, hey, why not? You know, no harm, no foul kind of race for them. So Landon and then Nathan, you know, we're getting closer to this racing season. And then, of course, this IMSA kickoff for their season. You know, how excited are you guys, not only for the Michelin Pilot Challenge race at Daytona, but the Rolex 24? And sub question, do you guys intend to stay up for all 24 hours?
Oh man, Rob, these topics are great. there's just so much to cover. You know, you look at the drivers, so Deegan, Cindric, Burton, Briscoe, and then you look at their past history. So you got Deegan who grew up on dirt. You think of Brian Deegan, you know, motocross, everything like that. Road, I don't know. So that's gonna be interesting to see her do well in that. And then you have Cindric and you got Briscoe. I mean, Briscoe, absolutely showed everybody off at Indianapolis, you know, going for the win. And I think he's grown pretty well with road coursing. And Cindric, I mean, he's just a machine at road course races, even in Xfinity and when he shot up to Cup for a couple races. Harrison Burton, he's good. He's just had some bad luck on the road courses, so I don't think we got to see his potential. But again, that can all be thrown out the window because these IMSA cars are a whole different type of racing. I mean, you're going up against people that have been doing this for many, many years and have grown to these cars. And yes, I do intend on planning on staying up for the full 24. I'm going to try. I'm not going to be at the track. I wish I was, but I'm also going to be attempting to do the full 24 on iRacing. So that's going to be exciting.
Wow. That's dedication right there. And yeah, to be so young and to have that energy to do all 24 hours, not just as a racing fan watching the race, but to do it for the sim racing side. Good luck to you for that. And keep us posted. Nathan, how about you, man? Are you going to stay for all the 24 hours? And how excited are you for this race?
No, I'm not staying up for all 24 hours. Like, that's not happening. But no, I mean, I'm going to watch a lot of it. I'm really excited for IMSA this year. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. You know, I'm excited because I'm going to be able to see my first IMSA race this year at Watkins Glen. So I'm super excited about that. But, like, the IMSA fields are kind of getting more and more stacked every year, especially these endurance races. And you know, kind of just what Landon was saying, you know, just kind of analyzing those four drivers. I mean, you know, Cindric and Briscoe are two very good road course racers. Briscoe could have won, you know, he had some really good drives on road courses this year, could have won Indy, did well at Watkins Glen. He had a couple of the road course races where he was top 10, I think, too. And then Cindric, obviously, he has a little bit of an IMSA background, so this is nothing really new for him. For Burton and Deegan, yeah, it's a little bit different. It'll be good for them. I think it'll definitely make them better road course racers down the road. And to be clear, I don't know if we ever mentioned this or not, but it'll be Cindric and Burton are working together, and then Deegan and Briscoe are working together. So like they're splitting a car. But you know, I'm excited to see how they do. I think it'll be a good learning experience for them, racing that Michelin Pilot Tire Challenge Series. And also, I wanted to add this too, which is super awesome. And we didn't talk about this either yesterday, or 2 days ago. Robert Wickens announced he's driving in that series full time as well. So just from everything that he's gone through from the Pocono IndyCar crash in 2018 to see him be able to get back into a racing car full time, that's super awesome to see. So I'm excited to see how he does this year.
That's a lot of intrigue in itself with the Rolex 24 from a motorsport standpoint. Just because, you know, Robert Wickens, he's chronicled his story about trying to get back into shape to adapt to his life, you know, given those unfortunate circumstances that were dealt to him at the Pocono IndyCar race in 2018. And now to be back in a race car in one of the most prestigious racing events in the entire calendar, that's just incredible. I mean, we don't really try to pull favorites, but I think it would be hard to remiss the fact that we're all going to be supporting him for this whole, you know, comeback that he's going to go through and to race at Daytona. So that's a story I'm going to be watching besides, you know, the prototype drivers doing their thing and Jimmy Johnson with, you know, the Express Racing Ally Racing team efforts. So, you know, ladies and gentlemen, we've got so much to look forward to. If this doesn't get you piped up, I don't know if you need to go on a roller coaster at Disney World to get scared and like pumped or jazzed up or drink a energy drink, because I'm already excited for some racing and I forgot it's Wild Card Sunday for football stuff. So here you go, folks. That is Podium Perspectives. That's a lot that we covered in such a short amount of time. So if you enjoyed that, let us know. Our Twitter handle again is The Podium Finish. Mine is Rob Tiongson. Nathan's is NSolly02, and then Landon, of course, is CRDulo Landon. So hope you like that edition of Podium Perspectives, because we're going to head into our penultimate segment of this podcast. So folks, you're in for a double treat today, because we've got a really warm edition of Hot Seat for this week. So I know you folks in the Carolinas are kind of thawing out from the snowstorm event, that happened on Sunday, and I hope you enjoyed it, made some snowmen and all of that. But as you're thawing out, we're going to have Sam Mayer and Josh Berry join us right now. Well, not really right now, but, you know, for the show. And they made some noise last year. You know, Josh Berry, of course, got his maiden Xfinity race win at Martinsville, which to me is still one of those most exciting, emotional race wins I've ever seen in my 30-odd years in this sport. And of course, we saw Sam Mayer really show what he could do in a stock car. To me, his race at Martinsville last fall was just the stuff of legends, to crash out really hard and then to still have a great chance at a great finish. That tells me a lot about this young man and what he can do. So, like I said earlier, when we kicked off the show, I interviewed both of these drivers during the Roval race weekend in Charlotte. And to say the least, they had a lot to share and a lot of optimistic perspectives. And also too, just excitement to be with such a competitive team and the chance to showcase who they can be in a stock car. And yes, these were my first on-site interviews at a racetrack in nearly 2 years. So I do want to give full disclosure. There's a little bit of spontaneity with these interviews, especially when we hear from Josh. So if there's a little bit of laughter involved, I'm not being tickled or anything. It's because it's one of those situations where video would have done more justice for this than an audio clip. But, you know, I think you guys are going to like it. And Nathan and Landon, I'm sure you're all going to be excited to hear this. So before we hear from Josh and from Sam, you know, Nathan and then Landon, what's your overall thoughts on these drivers? Not only in terms of their potential, but, you know, expectations as they kick off the Xfinity Series season next month.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how these guys will do, you know, their first full-time opportunities here in the Xfinity Series. I mean, Sam Mayer, obviously, he kind of struggled a little bit, you know, in his half season in the number eight car. But I anticipate he'll start to do better here this year. I think he'll finally get to victory lane. I mean, he's got a ton of potential. And so, you know, it's just super raw talent. He's super young. I think once he kind of just gets more experience, and, you know, he'll be a really great driver. Josh Berry, though, I mean, man, he was super impressive last year. I mean, he won twice in the Xfinity Series. You know, he's only supposed to have half the season in the Xfinity Series, but then all of a sudden he's racing for Jordan Anderson, and then he's racing to fill in for the injured Michael Annette. And then, you know, he goes to victory lane in Michael Annette's car in Las Vegas. And then, of course, the win that he had in the number eight car in the spring in Martinsville. So, I mean, I think Josh Berry is, I mean, you know, he's one of the more underrated drivers in the Xfinity Series, when talking about 2022. But I think he's the guy who can go in and get to the round of eight in the playoffs, and maybe even Sam Mayer, matter of fact. But Josh Berry, you know, he's a really good race car driver, so I'm excited to see what he can do. And same as Sam Mayer this year,
for sure. It's going to be exciting to see what these gentlemen can do for Junior Motorsports. And speaking of, you know, LC, you were at that race that Josh Berry won in Michael Annette's car. I was sitting in the chat room for our internal discussions when that happened, and you were shooting those photos for us. You know, Josh Berry's win was almost like winning in the hot seat of a NASCAR Heat video game. You know, he basically auditioned, but it felt that feel good to see him win in that number one car. You know, you were there for that race in Las Vegas, so you obviously have some thoughts on these drivers.
Yeah, I do. And it's nothing but good for these guys. I know of Josh Berry. I mean, you think of his super late model, you know, dominance that he does. And then he comes up to, you know, he's done a couple races here and there for Xfinity, and which he did well in. But then you come to last year where he wins at Martinsville in the eight car part-time. And then he's running races for Jordan Anderson Racing. And he's doing good for a team that, you know, started last year, you know, like 10 races in. He's doing great. And then he goes on to substitute for, you know, the injured Michael Annette, and then wins at Vegas, which I was there to see. It feels like it's a dream. Like, you don't very often, you don't see drivers, you know, come in sub for somebody and then just dominate. And that's what he did. And going to Sam Mayer, I mean, this kid is, he's got a lot of talent. I mean, he won Bristol and he was younger than I was. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, he won a lot in, you know, ARCA. When he ran in 2020 in the truck series, you know, Bristol, he won it. He's had a lot of bad luck, and I really feel for him, especially last year in the Xfinity series, especially Vegas. I was there when he unfortunately got taken out, and I saw him walking, you know, down pit lane while everybody else was still on the track, and I could just see the, you know, emotion in his eyes, and it's unfortunately that's what you're gonna get when you run in NASCAR. But I think both of them are gonna be standout. I think this year is gonna be great for them.
There are two of the three reasons why I think the Xfinity series is gonna be such a fun series to watch, just because Junior Motorsports is really tapping into their purpose as being this recruiting team for the Chevrolet efforts. You know, Josh Berry, I don't know if necessarily he'll go to Cup, but he's not an old guy by any means. And if he does well, he makes a good strong argument to be in the Cup series. You know, some of these other teams in the Chevrolet camp and maybe another camp, another OEM could think about having him around. And then Sam Mayer, he's only 18 years old, which kind of scares me because of the fact that he's a NASCAR driver in the top three series, born in the year 2003. 2003 people. I mean, I was 18 when he was just born. Now he's my age in 2003, but this year, which makes me feel very young. Yeah. So it's really cool because the future is now, and we might as well see it unfold and realize its potential with Sam Mayer and Josh Berry. We know what he can do in a stock car. So to see him do it in a full-time effort, I'm pumped, guys. I don't know about you. I know about what you guys said. So with that, let's grab some popcorn, a snack or beverage on this Monday or whatever day you're listening in, because Junior Motorsports' Josh Berry and Sam Mayer are the focus of this week's In the Hot Seat. Josh and Sam, let's hear from you right now.
All right. Well, Josh, thank you so much for joining us here for the Podium Finish and Podium Finish Live. First of all, you've been making the most of a great year with your well-earned wins at Martinsville and Las Vegas. So what's it been like for you to realize some of your goals and showcase your talents with Junior Motorsports?
Yeah, no, it's been awesome. Definitely a little bit unexpected. You know, really, the whole opportunity coming about was such a surprise to me. And then, you know, really, once we got going, I think I felt pretty early on that we would be able to have a good year. And, obviously, it's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of change for me, but by JRM, it's really fast race cars, and we've just been able to capitalize on that.
That's definitely what you've been doing as well, because it's been well documented how you and Dale go back to iRacing back in 2008. So how incredible has it been for you to go from his sim racing opponent to the guy that's driving his car not only this year but next year?
Yeah, no, it's been awesome. Like I said, I've been known him obviously for a long time, and you know, thankful for the opportunity that he gave me years ago. We've been racing a late model car for a long time, had a lot of success there, and you know, I kind of feel like after Dale retired, I think he was able to pay a little bit more attention to me and the racing we were doing late model car. Maybe that's how I ended up here, but all in all, it's still been a great experience.
I think you're having a good experience right now behind you, if you have a chance to look. That's just Noah messing around. Along the same line, sim racing, of course, has garnered plentiful attention with newer audiences, especially during the early days of the pandemic. So, you know, given your... Good. I'll get you back, Erickson. So, you know, given your experiences, how beneficial has iRacing been for you in terms of not only your experiences, but recruiting talents like yourself and William Byron?
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, we saw iRacing kind of explode during the pandemic last year, and you know, I was there, been a part of iRacing for a long time. It's been something really that's pretty normal to me. Like, I've always done it, always sim raced, and even before iRacing. But so you know, it's kind of normal for me, and it was amazing to see that explosion of popularity. and it was really cool. iRacing has been a partner on our late model car the last couple of years, and they were a partner with me this year on the 8 at Nashville. So it's really cool seeing everything come full circle. I think it's a great way to prepare. I really do. I think, especially now, this year without having practice and whatnot, I think any time that you can get at a racetrack beforehand, whether it's virtual or not, I think it's very beneficial. So, like I said, I've been experiencing a lot of new tracks this year, and I definitely think my time on iRacing's helped it.
I'm sure it has. And I'm, being a sim racer myself, did you also play NR 2003?
Oh yeah, no, definitely. It seems like so long ago. Really, that was kind of what I started doing. And I remember those days. I remember having it in our 2003, but not having a cable internet connection. So, I grew up racing around the Nashville Fairgrounds. There were some buddies that I knew there that told me about this. And when I talked my dad into getting a higher high speed internet connection, and then unlocked this huge world within our 2003 of all these mods and different things that they had on there, so it was definitely a crazy experience. I really enjoyed that, and then obviously that turned into iRacing.
You seem to be the poster boy for a lot of different avenues of racing, of course, with iRacing and the elite model scene. So what does it mean to be the face of many things that fellow race car drivers can relate to, knowing that hey, if you can do it, they can do it too?
Yeah, no, definitely. There's, like I said, I've been very fortunate to have a lot of great opportunities. I think that each one of those is very important to me. I think I've been a part of the sim racing, that community for a long time, and then just the short track racing that I've been doing and seeing the success that I've had, and that turned into success here at this level, I think it's just really fulfilling for me. So I've really enjoyed this year. Really looking forward to next year in the A car, and we'll see what we can do.
You got some great teammates, of course, that you've become rather familiar with. Noah, Justin, and of course Sam. So what are some of the things that they brought to the table that you feel has made you further excel behind the wheel?
Yeah, no, definitely. Each one of them is different, and I think there's a lot that we can learn from each other. Justin has a ton of experience, and brings a lot to the table for JRM. I think me and Noah are really pretty. We get along a lot better than what I expected, and Sam, he's young and learning and very talented. So it's just, they have a great future there. So hopefully I can be a part of it.
Well, it's obvious that you and Noah get along pretty well, because he likes to play pranks on you. So do you plan to get him back on this?
Maybe someday, but yeah, he's always up to something.
I guess I better watch my back as well. Now, I understand that you worked as a bank teller before you started racing. So you and Roman Grosjean have something in common right there, and me too, I guess. What were some of the things that were valuable to you from working in the bank that you feel like, hey, it shaped me into the person I am?
No, yeah, that was fun times. I was actually in high school and a couple different business classes, and then that bank in particular reached out and had a job opening, and I kind of got suggested for it. And at the time, my dad owned a restaurant, and I was working there, and then that kind of moved into that. I thought it was a great experience, just learning how that stuff works and what to do and what not to do with your money. I think that's something that definitely, has helped me over the years, and I have greater appreciation for. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun, and it was definitely it was a pretty cool story.
Let me ask you, because you've been a bank teller. What is going on in there? Nah. Goodness gracious. I wish we could show the video of this. This is hilarious, folks. I was going to say, being a bank teller, did you always dislike having to count the cash and sorting them out when the Brinks truck would come to the bank?
Oh, yeah. That feels like so long ago. I remember how crazy it was. I think my least favorite thing to do was, there's a few times that I had to run the drive-thru.
Oh.
And that was, it was so much busier than inside.
Yes.
So that was something a lot to keep up. It's hard to keep up with, but usually on the inside, things happen a little slower, but when you're outside there, all the guys are just staring at you through the window.
Oh yeah, I hated that, especially when I got a night shift. I'm like, uh-oh, when that things happen. I know I get probably got some things coming up, so I'll try to wrap up a few more questions here. Yeah. So, kind of being off topic here, what would you consider to be the definitive Josh Berry theme song that speaks to folks about you as a person and a driver?
Oh my gosh, I have no idea. I have no idea there. That's something I would have to think about. I have to get back with you on that one.
But you're not a Post Malone fan like Sam is, are you?
No, not particularly. yeah, no, I'm not real particular with music. I obviously like music. I'm not specific to one genre. I kind of listen to a little bit of everything. Don't really, have any go-tos in that aspect. I just kind of like it all.
Absolutely. My last question for you, I'm going to make you be me for a second. If you had to write an article about yourself, what are three words that you would use to describe yourself as a race car driver?
Hardworking, I think, would be one. Patient. I don't know. I don't know really. I feel like I can think of something better than that, but just trying to think of the word. Maybe precise.
Precise.
Yeah.
I like that one. All right. So, first of all, Sam, thank you for joining us here for the Podium Finish and the Podium Finish Live Radio Show. First of all, you came from a state that's produced plentiful racing talents in NASCAR, so. What does it mean to represent Wisconsin as one of the newest faces in the series, given the state's rich history with motorsports?
Yeah, I mean, Wisconsin is definitely a hotbed for racing, and being one of those drivers that's finally made it up to a higher level stock car racing is definitely awesome. Obviously, we got to perform to stay here, and I'm really looking forward to racing here at the Roble because this is a track that I know really well and have run well in the past, so I'm looking forward to it.
What are some of the challenges about the Roval that you embrace as a driver? Because it's pretty unique in terms of the familiar elements of the speedway and, of course, the road course elements once you get to the infield.
Yeah, the transitions from the infield to the big track and then back down to the infield is it's definitely an interesting way of doing it because Daytona is nice and smooth, whereas this one's a little more rough. So having to deal with that and still making speed and keeping the grip in the car is definitely a big deal because the straightaway is so long after that. So that's the biggest thing that I'm going to be worried about today.
Certainly. And you've got some great resources around you, of course, with Noah, your de facto PR guy right now. I'm kidding, of course. But you've made your first Xfinity starts this year with Junior Motorsports ahead of your full season next year. So how have you kept balance with the ups and downs of this year, knowing how competitive this division is?
Yeah, I mean, Xfinity is one of the most competitive series right now, and the cars are hardest to drive with all the series. So I definitely have my hands full, especially with no practice or qualifying or anything like that. Next year, the field's going to be even stronger with all these cup drivers probably going to come down and fill a lot of these seats. So it's definitely going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to be working my tail off to stay here and hopefully get a bunch of wins.
I certainly hope so, too, for you. Obviously, this is really good equipment in the Xfinity series. Now, throughout this year, of course, you've worked with Noah, worked with Michael, and Josh as well. What's it like to collaborate with them in terms of their various experiences in the series?
Yeah, I mean, all five drivers that's run for Junior Motorsports this year, including me, we're all really different, so we all bring something new to the table. It makes us a lot better as a team because Junior Motorsports, I like to think of us as a family. We're all one big organization with four cars, so we work our tails off to do the best we can to produce cars that can win and work together as drivers to help each other to win at these different racetracks.
Along the same lines, whether it's from Kelly or Dale or any of your teammates, what's been the most memorable advice you've been given so far?
I mean, talking to Dale before the Daytona race earlier this year was probably the most memorable advice I'll ever get. Just because Dale, he's awesome, he's really down to earth, really helpful to young drivers like me. He helped Noah in the past too, so having that under my belt already, talking to him about these kind of business stuff, I guess this is, it's definitely really helpful. It's a lot of work, but it's definitely worth it and paying off.
And one of the things that's been paying off for you is, you've been one of the seven drivers who are part of this year's Driver's Edge development program, where, of course, Junior Motorsports and GMS have collaborated with young, talented drivers like yourself. So what does it mean to be a part of this program and realize the opportunities you've earned because of it?
Yeah, it's a huge deal for me. I mean, Junior Motorsports partnering with GMS, which is another Chevy program under the Chevy brand. It's definitely a big deal for young drivers like me and Noah, who are trying to make our names in the sport, trying to get to the Cup Series and make a name for ourselves. Definitely super helpful for me too, because I have Josh Wise working with me, and he's a huge part of my career and my development as a young driver trying to make it in the Cup Series.
Josh Wise, I have a lot with younger drivers, of course, with this and GMS. Have you been on those long excruciating bike rides with him and Sheldon?
Oh my gosh, those things are painful for sure. I'm not the best bike rider either, so I'm always in the back trying to hang on. But it's a lot of fun. I love running with these guys and hanging out and working out with these guys, because it helps me as a person and a race car driver. So it's really helpful in all ends of my life.
Let me ask you this on that topic. What is a harder challenge for you? Going for those long, excruciating bike rides up and down the hills of North Carolina, or going in a hot race in the Xfinity Series during June at Texas Motor Speedway?
Not going to lie, I've never been to Texas before, so I can't answer that for that track. But a lot of these mile and a halfs, I would say biking is actually a lot harder. Just because I'm physically working a lot harder, like, to keep up. But all these other racetracks and it being in a race car is just familiar to me, so it's a lot easier for me.
Fair enough. You complete the fifth on that one nicely, because it's true. Now, you know what it takes to win in NASCAR. Obviously, you won the truck race at Bristol last year. So as you gain confidence and experience in this division, how sweet would it be to win for Junior Motorsports, whether it's this year or next year?
That would be the biggest thing in my career so far. I mean, obviously, having a truck win under my belt has proved that my name belongs here. But obviously, being at a whole other level in the Xfinity Series is another big step up. So we gotta, I gotta work hard, and my team's gonna work hard for me to keep up. And getting another win would be super huge for me, especially if we can get momentum and win a couple more.
Absolutely. I'm gonna switch gears here, because we've talked a lot about racing, of course. So I'm going to switch things up with a rather interesting Twitter poll you ran last month about eating sausage links plain or with syrup. So you're qualified. You're from Wisconsin. What is the Sam Mayer way of having sausage? Is it best with plain or is it with syrup?
See, that's the reason I brought that whole poll up, is because me and one of my friends were having an argument about whether or not because we were having breakfast or dinner, and I saw her put it on. I was like, what the heck? Why do you do that? Because I've never heard of it before. So we argued for a while, and I finally put it on Twitter to make Twitter decide. And I can't believe Twitter decided to put syrup on sausage. So I was kind of disappointed in my side, but also impressed with hers.
Syrup with sausage is an interesting mix. I'll give you a challenge. Have sausage with rice.
I would love to do that. That sounds really good.
Because that's my meal. That's what fuels me instead of coffee.
Okay, I like that.
There you go. Let's imagine that you're a DJ for a radio station, probably the one that I'm from for St. Bonaventure Radio in Olean, New York. What are some of your go-to songs that you would play in the airways for your listeners?
Man, I don't know. I love Post Malone, so I'd probably just blast him all day long. That's my guy. Probably not.
Well, we'll put that in the exclusive bleeping version of the radio show. You know, you're going to be full-time next year, and obviously I'm imagining you're really excited about that. But what are your genuine thoughts on taking the full slate of races this next year, given what you've experienced this year with the Chopin race format?
I'm really, really excited, because obviously we're doing this year with Josh Berry being in the car for the first half of the year, and the second half we did that just so I can learn at least most of these racetracks before I go and race in the championship next year. It makes me super excited, because I'll go back to these tracks the second time, but I'll be a rookie still, so I'm going for that. And then obviously having the yellow stripe spot on my bumper is definitely kind of
Well, I remember doing one thing in the garden.
Other than that, it's pretty.
Which actor did you choose to play you in the Dixie Queen?
Can
it be like people from the past?
Well, when you're flying out on Thursday,
I'm saying Robin Williams would be funny. I think because I like to have an attitude of positivity and just fun loving. I think Robin Williams is a really good fit because it's just such a fun himself too.
Are you talking about Robin Williams during the 70s and more Mindy, or talking about him in the 90s with the Genie and Mrs. Doubtfire?
Probably when he was younger back in the 70s.
Well, yeah,
I think that might be pretty good fit.
Well, there you have it, folks. Sam Mayer dropping some truth here for the Podium Finish Live. Catch this on the air in 2 weeks. So, looking forward to hearing that and having the Q&A version on our website. So, Sam, do you have anything else you want to share with the fans?
I just want to thank all the Bad to the Bone race fans that support me and support racing in general, because without you guys, we would have nothing. So, thank you.
Well, folks, that was Josh Berry and Sam Mayer who were in this week's hot seat. So my thanks to Casey Herschel for making these interviews possible. Look for these interviews on TPF in the coming days in case you missed the podcast or want to have sort of an audiobook experience with the text in front of you. Well, I'll have that up for you guys and girls later this week. Well, episode 13, not an unlucky episode at all. And we're going to be closing things out here very much right now, as we got some content we're going to promote for this week. So I know Nathan has been hard at work kind of recapping what the Truck Series drivers have been doing from last year as he gets ready to wrap up that series, and I'll throw in some assists here and there. So Nathan, what other content are you working on this week for TPF?
Yeah, so like you said, I'm working on finishing up some of those Truck Series review stuff. I'm just finished up Matt Crafton. For other content this week, I'm going to be working on an Austin Cindric Harrison Burton piece, kind of with them entering their rookie seasons in the Cup Series. And otherwise, you know, we'll kind of just feel it out, see what interviews we land, see what availabilities there are, to see what's newsworthy and kind of go from there. That's just kind of, you know, I guess one of the beauties of journalism. You never really know where you'll be headed. So, we'll see what happens this week, see who's available, see what all the different news is, and we'll go from there. But yeah, I think the next piece for sure will be something about Austin Cindric and Harrison Burton, so be on the lookout for that.
We'll be tuned in for sure, getting ready to read those articles on TPF. Landon, for you, and now it's a few months away till you're back at the racetrack, but what are some of the races you'll be starting off with for this year?
Well, first of all, I'm going to do a little bit of driving in, you know, the simulator world. Going to be doing some 24 hours at Daytona. Of course, I have a team, so I'm not going to be soloing it, but that would be too much for me. But I'm hoping to be in Vegas, and then hopefully to cover some. Our short track here in town is starting back up, so hopefully I can get down there and work around my busy schedule at work and shoot some a little bit of short track love, so to say.
Yeah, you definitely got to support those grassroots series, because those are the sort of pipeline, if you will, for the major series in America and around the world. So looking forward to hopefully getting you back at Las Vegas, and I'm sure our good friend and buddy Dominic Lavoie would be excited for you to be there to cover that race as well. And this racing season's getting around the corner really, really quickly. As for me, I'm just looking for Dakota in a couple of months, as I'll be staying put in Austin for a little bit longer. But definitely, you know, I'm going to be going to as many races as possible still, as I had intended if I were to go to Charlotte. So I still got a lot to get to. My Eric Almirola piece as well. A little bit of Harrison Burton, kind of differing from what Nathan's going to be doing. And then, of course, on the next episode, I might as well just say it now, on episode 14, we're going to do things right, not that we never do, but we're going to do things right because we've got Ally Racing's Alex Bowman joining us next weekend for the hot seat segment. So our first real 2022 interview coming your way, ladies and gentlemen. So looking forward to that. And maybe some more of the Hendrick boys joining us. We'll see about that. So Landon, Nathan, I'm so excited you all got to join us again for another episode. And Landon, especially, thank you for joining us for today's recording for TPF Live episode 13. Hope to have you back again, and would love to hear more of your thoughts about, you know, when you were shooting the race at Phoenix last fall, and of course, those local short track races, and your same racing efforts. So best of luck in your virtual race at Daytona coming up, and of course, with your race at Phoenix. And Nathan, hopefully the St. Bonaventure Bonnies keep up with their winning streak after they've come back from their little streak. So when we come back, maybe we'll be talking about the Bonnies being ranked again, because that would be pretty sweet. And all for you Buffalo fans, you didn't win the Super Bowl, okay? Get over it. You beat the Patriots, you crushed them. Wait till Mac Jones is a really mature quarterback, because he will make you Bills fans feel sorry. That's right. I'm coming after you, New York. Not really. I'm kidding, sort of. So before I ramble on and on, I might as well wrap up the show, because this was an excellent episode 13, if I may say so, for my co-host Nathan, doing an awesome job as always. And of course, Landon Ciardulo getting those photos and finally getting to talk to you here. Super cool. And thank you very much. And of course, for Josh Berry and Sam Mayer, always great to hear from them. So next weekend, folks, tune in live. Well, not tune in live, but tune in rather for episode 14 on next week, because we'll have Alex Bowman joining us for that episode, and maybe another TPF or if they're going to swing by. So always a little bit of surprise here on TPF Live. So for Nathan Solomon, Landon Ciardulo, Josh Berry, Sam Mayer, this is Rob Tiongson signing off for the Podium Finish Live, a St. Bonaventure University podcast production produced by Nathan Solomon and Rob Tiongson. Thank you very much for tuning in for TPF Live, and we'll see you again next week. Till then, let's go get that checkered flag. So long, folks.